Chapter 28. The senior staff were all gathered in the galley waiting for me. Chang was there, along with Sims, and the leader of each country's spec ops team, plus Desai representing the pilots, and Dr. Venkman representing the science team, because I needed creative ideas from the science team. And Sergeant Adams, although technically not senior staff, she was there because I needed practical ideas. "We have a problem. A serious problem. Not with the ship," I added hurriedly as I saw concern on people's faces. "The ship is fine, and we'll be ready to jump again in 6 hours."
"Yep," Skippy said. "The ship is hunky-dory. All..."
"Skippy, I will be speaking," I cut him off. "I'd appreciate it if you hold your comments until I request your input." Faces around the galley reflected surprise. They all expected me to joke around with Skippy as usual. The fact that I didn't told them this was not business as usual. Of course, I couldn't see Skippy's face. The tone of his voice spoke volumes. "Very well, Colonel," is all he said, with no snarkiness or friendliness. "Thank you." Skippy was able to access data from the ship that he destroyed in orbit over Newark. Part of the data was messages to the scavenger leader from his clan. To us, the most important of those messages states that the Kristang are paying the Theranin to send a special long-range ship to Earth without using a wormhole. That ship will arrive at Earth in 29 months. People gasped and glanced at each other in fear and shock. And you can see why this is a problem. We not only need to stop that long-range ship from reaching Earth, we need to destroy it in a way that the Theranin will not realize the ship was attacked by humans, or even that the ship was attacked because its destination is Earth. Somehow we need to destroy that ship and make it look like an ordinary casualty of war. But first, we need to find it. On the trip from Newark to Fire Dragon Clan territory, we had a lot of time to come up with a plan to destroy the Surveyor ship and its escorts before the Surveyor began its long, lonely journey to Earth. Our collective brain power, including Skippy, had nothing. Zero. No clue how in our no longer quite a star carrier we could take on even one ship without the Dutchman very likely being destroyed in the process. I was getting increasingly desperate, even considering a suicide mission where the Dutchman would jump in way too close to the Surveyor, hit it with everything we had, and detonate the dozen nukes in our cargo bay. Before I did something so desperate, I would need to find an uninhabited planet that could sustain human life to drop off most of the crew. Trouble is, Skippy pointed out, planets that could support complex, sentient life forms and were within practical range of a wormhole were rare and valuable and likely already had someone living there. Even if I kept everyone aboard the Dutchman and self-destructed the ship, it might not result in killing the Surveyor ship. And even if it did, the enemy would know the Surveyor had been the target of someone very desperate, desperate to stop that ship from reaching Earth. So, we were back to square one. We needed data on where the Surveyor was, where it was going, and what ships would be escorting it. Without that, we were only playing useless what-if games. Which is why I found myself alone with Skippy in the smaller of our two remaining Theranin dropships, buried inside a small ice-and-dirt comet drifting at high speed toward a Kristang data relay owned by the Fire Dragon clan. Our biggest problem, I had decided with a genius flash of insight while I was in the gym, was not that the Flying Dutchman was only one ship, nor that it had been designed as a star carrier instead of a purpose-built combatant intended to engage enemy ships directly, nor that our Dutchman now had only two reactors instead of the original six. No. After I'd spent a full hour in a brainstorming session that had yielded absolutely nothing, I realized the problem was that we didn't have enough missiles. If we had a whole lot of ship-killer missiles, we could jump in near an enemy ship, launch a cloud of missiles, jump to another nearby location, launch more missiles, and so on. Minimize the risk to the Dutchman with quick jumps, and eventually our barrage of missiles was bound to overwhelm an enemy ship's defenses and score a hit. The Surveyor could jump away. We'd track it and jump to follow. "Hey, Skippy," I said, while bending down to wash my hands in a too-low Theranin sink. "Can we make more missiles, and by we, I mean you, with the equipment we have aboard the Dutchman?"
"Nope."
That wasn't quite the detailed answer I was hoping for. "Because..." "Come on, Skippy. Usually you want to give me a ton more info than I ask for. And you ignore me and interrupt me until I can dumb it down sufficiently. So my answer to you is a simple nope, you dope.
I already told you. What we have aboard is all we're going to have. Some items, like the atomic compression warheads, are impossible to create without very large, specialized facilities. The missile's propulsion units are also not something I can make out of moon dust and dreams. In addition to the limited number of Theranin Model 30 missiles we have, that's what their designation translates as, I was able to scrape together enough material to create a few ship-to-ship missiles. They are roughly equivalent to a Kristang design that went obsolete about 700 years ago. That's the extent of my miracles, Joe. Crap. Dang, I figured that. Had to ask anyway. All right, well, can we get more missiles somewhere? Skippy snorted. Your time on Newark, away from me, made you dumber, huh? Sure, Joey. We can pop over to the local missile mart. They're having a 2-for-1 sale for new customers with good credit. You moron. I'm serious, Skippy. We've got a ship full of badass Spec Ops troops that are spoiling for another fight. We raided a heavily guarded asteroid. There must be an armory somewhere, or a stores ship, where we can steal some missiles. No. You know what? I wonder sometimes if you can even hear yourself talk, or do monstrously idiotic ideas escape your brain without you realizing that you are speaking out loud. The Theranin and Kristang have stores or supply ships that transport materials to battle groups. Those do frequently contain missiles. Those ships are also always escorted by combatant ships, frigates, or destroyers, precisely because they are such tempting targets. Damn. I'll scratch that idea. Raiding armories, another idiotic idea you mentioned, is close to impossible. The facilities that Theranin use to manufacture missiles and atomic compression warheads are always on large, rocky, airless or nearly airless planets or moons. They are uninhabited planets or moons in case of industrial accidents, which happen from time to time. The facilities are buried very deep underground. I'm talking kilometers underground, and they extend for dozens of kilometers or more. Making atomic compression devices is a very energy-intensive process. The Theranin use them because their explosive yield is near that of a nuclear weapon, without the radiation that is banned by the rules, remember? Yeah, I remember. Rules enforced by the Rindaloo and Maxulks on the lesser species that did the fighting for them. Rules intended to keep the war from spiraling out of control and damaging precious habitable planets that the two dominant species cared about. You're right. No way we can raid a place like that. And whatever plan we come up with, it needs to make do with the weapons we have now. Unfortunately, yes. Also unfortunately, I still do not see a way this ship can destroy a surveyor and its escorts. Destroy that ship in a way which avoids the Theranin realizing the surveyor was the target. Damn it. There has to be a way to do that. We just haven't thought of it yet. In an infinite multiverse of probabilities, you may be right. In this particular localized space-time, I do not see it. Which is again why Skippy and I were in a dropship frozen under the surface of a dirty snowball, hurtling out of control on the very outskirts of a star system controlled by the Fire Dragon Clan. Burying a dropship in a comet was the best idea we had for how we could sneak Skippy close enough to the relay station so he could ransack it for data. He needed to fly within 300,000 kilometers to do that, and as the relay would not simply dump all their data to us if we asked nicely, we had to sneak in close. It was a chicken-and-egg problem, Skippy explained. The access codes we acquired when Skippy took over the Flying Dutchman had since been changed in the normal rotation schedule followed by the Theranin. With such codes, we could have simply jumped in near the relay, requested a data dump, and been on our way. Data relay stations were maintained at the edge of star systems so Theranin ships could exchange information without having to risk traveling into the web of gravity wells and relatively close confines of the star system. The only easy way to get data from a relay, including the full set of access codes, was to have a proper access code, which we didn't have. Thus, it was a classic chicken-and-egg problem. A dropship, even a small dropship with an optimally functioning stealth field, could not get close enough to a relay station. While a stealth field would conceal the dropship, the relay station's sensor field would detect some hidden object distorting the field and investigate closely. Perhaps the investigation would take the form of a missile or maser beam strike. Which is why we, actually Captain Desai, had come up with the idea of us capturing a dirty snowball, carving a dropship-sized hole in it, then covering the hole after we stuffed a dropship in there. We rendezvoused with a small comet in an uninhabited neighborhood star system
and got it wrestled into a docking bay by a dozen people in powered suits. The damn thing still massed a couple tons, and we had to be very careful even in zero gravity not to squash anyone by a clumsy move. Once in the landing bay, which was kept in cold vacuum, we carved out a hole. Skippy and I got into the dropship, and the guys in suits carefully maneuvered us into the hole and covered it. "This is an awful, idiotic, terrible, terrifying idea," Skippy lamented. "An idea of epic, incredible, mind-blowing stupidity, Joe. Truly, in the history of the galaxy, I can't think of anything that even comes close." "What?" I asked. "This is a hell of a time to tell me now, Skippy. It was your idea to encase the dropship in a comet." "Yeah, that idea is truly brilliant." "Then what about this is terrifyingly stupid? I didn't think you would be flying the dropship, Joe. We are doomed." "Very funny." "Dutchman, this is Barney. We're ready in here."
"Roger that, Barney. You sit tight in there," Desai replied.
Desai then accelerated the Dutchman in normal space, so that when the comet was dropped off, it would have the precise course and speed to fly by the relay station in the guise of uninteresting, ordinary space junk that hung around the edges of all solar systems. The Dutchman jumped in, gently released the comet, maneuvered to a safe distance, and jumped away. We were on our own. If all went well, we would fly by the relay station in 22 hours, and the Dutchman would jump back in to recover us in 26 hours after that. Yay! 48 hours alone with Skippy. He was as thrilled about it as I was. "I hope you didn't eat anything gassy for breakfast. And damn, could you lay off the aftershave a bit? Oatmeal and wheat toast for breakfast. No worries there, Skippy. And I'm not wearing aftershave. I didn't bring any when we left Earth, you ass." He made a sniffing sound. "Ugh, so that's your natural smell? Next time you should reconsider not bringing aftershave. Oh, damn, and there's not even a shower aboard this thing. This is going to be a long trip." "Uh-huh. You want to play chess or something? With you? Ha! Maybe a game of Go Fish." We mostly left each other alone after that. I read a book on my iPad, tried to nap, ate a simple lunch, and read some more, while Skippy did whatever asshole beer cans did. When I finished the book, I tried playing chess against my iPad, concluded my always miserable chess skills may have somehow deteriorated, and glanced over at Skippy, who was strapped into the co-pilot seat. "Hey, Skippy, you there?"
"I'm here. Always. What's up?"
"Something's bothering me. Terrifies me, actually."
"How did that Theranan destroyer squadron set a trap for us?"
Because if they know humans are flying this ship, then even if they don't know we messed with the wormhole, we are totally screwed."
Did I screw up somewhere, Skippy? Did I get us all killed? Not the crew here, I mean. Did I get all of humanity killed?"
I started to say. "Joseph Arthur Bishop," Skippy fairly shouted. That set me back in my seat. Wow, only my mother uses my middle name, and only when she's pissed at me. Whew. Well, you weren't ever going to shut up so I could get a word in. Rest easy, Joe. You didn't screw up. To be specific, your myriad screw-ups are not why we got ambushed by the little green men. No way were they waiting for us. No way in hell. If the Theranan new monkeys are flying this ship, they would have established a layered defense with battleships at the center. Battleships can project significantly more powerful damping fields. We would have had zero chance to jump away if we had encountered a task force centered around battleships. The Theranan would never have assigned such a vital mission to a single squadron of destroyers. If they knew one of their star carriers had been stolen, and they thought they knew where it is, they'd send an entire battle group at least. The Theranan would not screw around with half measures. He had not yet convinced me.
"I hear you, but what are the odds that we would jump into a trap like that?
Don't give me the odds calculated to 100 freaking decimal points. I'm asking a real-world question here, not mathematics.
No need to crunch numbers. I think we didn't jump into a trap at all."
"How you figure that?"
"Simple. If it was a trap, there would have been a lot more ships waiting for us, and we would be dead. Or you monkeys would. I'd be drifting in space, wishing I was dead. At least being in hard vacuum for millions of years would get the monkey smell off me. Mostly. What I think happened is that Elder Site that I thought had not yet been discovered actually is known to the Theranan. They took everything useful out of it a long time ago. While they were ransacking the Elder Site, they built up that system as a military base to defend the site against the Jarapha. That star system was closer to Jarapha territory before the recent wormhole shift, the Theranin would have fortified the area to protect their assets. Since they stripped the site, I believe the Theranin have continued using that system as a secret military base. As I told you, the Flower's crappy Kristang sensors are lucky to detect a star in a star system. Our beat-up frigate has no chance to find a military base that the Theranin wish to keep secret.
Great theory, Skippy. It doesn't explain why that destroyer squadron had us surrounded as soon as we jumped in.
That may have been partly my fault. A teensy, infinitesimal bit my fault.
What?
That surprised me. You got some splaining to do, Lucy.
Actually, Ricky Ricardo never said that on the show. That is a myth. Similar to how people commonly say,
I never saw the show, Skippy. That was before my time. It's a pop culture thing.
Oh, got it. I'll make a note of it.
And?
And I said, I'll make a note of it.
Duh, man, your mind wanders sometimes.
I rolled my eyes. I meant, and, back to how our getting ambushed may have been partly your fault.
Damn, Skippy.
We were talking about that like 5 seconds ago. How could you forget in that short a time?
5 meat sack seconds, dum-dum. For me, your species could have gone from ignorant apes living in trees to sentient beings in the same time.
I say could have, because, you know, you are still ignorant apes.
Don't try changing the subject, Skippy.
Damn, the monkey is on to me, he muttered.
All right. I think that destroyer squadron was there for training or something like that. Those destroyers or some stealthed satellites detected the Flower jumping in because a blind man could have seen that. The Theranin stayed quiet, probably wondering what the hell a Kristang frigate was doing there. By itself, a Kristang ship could not have traveled all the way to that star system. The Theranin must have been very, very curious. After the Flower jumped away, the Theranin knew they hadn't been detected, and they figured the Flower would be back, with more ships.
That's when those destroyers got into position, to establish a damping field that covered where the Flower was likely to jump in. But that also explains why their damping field wasn't originally tuned to prevent a Theranin ship from jumping away. They expected Kristang ships, not a star carrier. Us jumping in must have surprised the hell out of them. That surprise, their hesitation before returning the damping field, is how we got away at first.
Uh-huh. Makes sense, I agreed.
Does not explain how it is partly your fault.
Damn! I was hoping you forgot about that by now. Why don't you have your typical short attention span when I need it?
Here it is, Joe. I may have been showing off a little. I programmed our jump in to be almost exactly where the Flower had jumped out. Serves me right for caring about impressing a barrel of monkeys. Why should I care what ignorant apes think, right?
Though he was certainly an arrogant shithead, he didn't need to feel guilty about something that wasn't his fault.
So you were a little more accurate than you needed to be. That didn't affect anything. Even if you were off by 1,000 kilometers, those destroyers would have surrounded us. That was the best spot for us to jump into, right?
No. And right there is the problem. That was the best spot for the Flower to jump into, considering that ship's crappy jump drive. The Dutchman could have jumped in much closer to the Elder site. That is why I feel guilty, Joe. The Theranin surrounded the place they expected Kristang ships to jump in, and that's where I took us. If I jumped us in closer to that moon like I should have, we could have been on the edge of the damping field, and could have gone much further with that first jump away.
He sounded miserable. I understood how he felt. The conversation had started with me feeling miserable and guilty, thinking I had nearly gotten us all killed.
Crap, Skippy. You let me feel guilty all this time, when it was your fault?
A teensy bit my fault. That's all.
His voice sounded hurt.
I'm sorry, Skippy. I guess I was kind of hoping that if those Theranin had a way to track the Dutchman, we could do the same thing and solve our problem of hunting down that surveyor ship.
They got lucky, Joe. There are no shortcuts.
We continued racing along through empty space in our dirty snowball, slowly tumbling at one rotation every 46 minutes. There was no indication the relay station considered us a threat, even though their long-range sensor grid had seen us 2 hours ago. We were an innocent, uninteresting, dirty snowball, no different from the billions of such objects forming a loose cloud around the star system. We would not pass close enough to the station to be in any way a threat. We hoped. All was going well, until 4 hours before the closest point of our flyby, when Skippy sounded an alarm.
Gamma ray burst. Multiples. 7,
No, 8 Kristang ships just jumped in. They're sort of between us and the relay. Damn it. They are moving very roughly parallel to us. Unless they change course, we're going to pass uncomfortably close through their formation about a half hour after we fly by the relay. Oh, this is bad. Crap. They see us? They know we're here? I asked in a panic. Well, do they see this comet? Yes, certainly they do. Do they know our dropship is under this ice? No way. Or I don't think so. Unlikely. Very unlikely. What the hell are they doing here? Relay stations are common rendezvous points, Joe. This is not entirely unexpected. Unfortunate, not unusual. They could be... Yes, they are exchanging data. Shh. Be quiet a minute, will you? I'm listening to them. Skippy was silent a few minutes. So was I, although Skippy wasn't holding his breath like I was. Darn, Joe, we got a problem. The good news is those ships are simply exchanging data and going to be on their way. They're not aware of us, and they're not looking for us. The bad news is they are waiting for another ship to join them, and while they're waiting, they will be engaged in a cross-decking operation, exchanging supplies and crews between ships. They will have crew outside the ships in suits and dropships flying around between ships. They will not want a ball of ice creating a hazard by flying near them. It is possible they will hit us with a maser to knock us onto a different course, and so avoid their formation. I'm sorry. Damn it. What can I do? Hey, if you're by yourself, you're small enough they won't see you, right? Sure, I can make myself small as a tube of lipstick, and I can become essentially invisible to sensors. Why? Because, I said as I unstrapped him from the seat, you can fly by that relay station by yourself. You don't need this dropship. Whoa, wait just a minute, monkey brain. You're going to toss me out an airlock? For real this time, and very gently. I'll give you a little push, you float away and fly right by that relay. That way, if the Kristang do hit this comet, you won't be affected. You will be affected, you ass, he shouted. That's a risk. The Army did mention there might be risks involved when they gave me a rifle. I had to sign a form about it. Yeah, risk of you shooting yourself in the foot, you idiot. Joe, this is, and I'm adding emphasis here, a gargantuanly stupid idea, even by monkey standards. As I put on my spacesuit helmet, I responded, I am open to other ideas, Skippy. Other ideas where you fly by the relay without being detected, get the data we need, and are safely taken back aboard the Dutchman. You got anything like that? No. Great. Then we, in this case, no means not yet. Damn, you monkeys are impatient. Listen, Skippy, in meat sack time, you've had only seconds to think up an alternative idea. In your time, what? You had, what, years? If you haven't thought up something yet, you probably won't, because there is no alternative. You'll be fine floating in space for a while by yourself. I'll be fine here. Define fine for me, in terms of you. If they hit this ice ball with a maser... I'm a soldier, Skippy. The mission comes first, okay? There is one of me and billions of monkeys. Damn it! Now you've got me saying it. Billions of humans on Earth. This mission has almost no margin for error. You told me our only likely chance to track that surveyor ship is to pull data off that relay. I need you to do that for me and not to worry about me. Can you do that? I have to worry about you, Joe. You are a particularly dumb monkey in an unforgiving universe. You clearly can't take care of yourself. You're the monkey who says, "Ooh, leopard has pretty spots, I should touch it." Skippy, I said as I stepped into the airlock. You get the data from that relay and I promise you, I will never try to pet a leopard. Deal? I do not like this, Joe. I do not like this one tiny bit. It's not like I'm jumping for joy about it either, Skippy. Do we have a deal? There was a heartfelt sigh, then, I suppose. Damn, why can't you pick this time to come up with one of your crazy ideas? This isn't crazy enough for you? I see your point. Let's get this over with. When the hole in the comet was covered over, it wasn't filled in all the way. What they'd done was stretch a thin tarp across the top of the hole, then sprayed water, which quickly froze, to cover the tarp about a meter thick. To make it look like the rest of the comet, they packed dirty snow on top. From the outside, you couldn't tell there had ever been a hole. Getting out of the airlock, I gently flew up to the bottom of the tarp and used a cutter on low power to make a hole just big enough for me to fit through. Skippy advised me so that we timed my cutting through into space while that side of the comet faced away from the relay station and the Kristang ships. I stuck my head and shoulders out and held Skippy up. Which way? Off to your left.
Give me a good push, or we won't get far enough apart for it to matter. On three, okay? 3, 2, 1. Now. Holding on with my feet wedged into the ice and with my left hand, I threw Skippy as hard as I could with my right. He quickly disappeared from view. Was that good? Too late now, anyway. Yes, that was a good push. I will come another 3,000 kilometers closer to the relay station. Stop talking now. You have to go silent. I can talk to you, but you can't reply. Good luck, Colonel Joe. Good luck, Skippy, I mouthed silently. Before the comet rotated so the hole was visible to the Kristang, I covered it again as best I could by melting snow with the cutter and tried to pack it over the opening. The best I could do was a half-assed job. I had to hope none of the Kristang were bored enough to look closely at a ball of ice passing by in deep space. With the hole covered well enough, I went back into the dropship. This time I left my helmet on. If the Kristang hit the comet with a maser, I wanted to have a supply of oxygen in case the dropship got a hole poked in it. Also, I powered up the dropship's stealth field, setting it as tight as possible around the hull. A tight stealth field drew extra power. Power I had plenty to spare, as I didn't plan to run the engines. On its normal setting, the stealth field would have extended partly outside the comet, and the Kristang would have become suspicious why the comet had suddenly changed its appearance. The last thing I did was activate the dead man switch for the missile warhead strapped onto the seat behind me. If things went south, we could not risk the Kristang discovering a human or human remains in a Theranan dropship. Either I could let go of the switch, or if I was already dead or seriously injured, my hand would let go on its own, and I, the dropship and comet, would become a cloud of particles. Skippy would be safely away, not that a mere missile warhead could hurt him. The Dutchman would eventually pick him up, he would contact the ship, and Chang would continue the mission. That would not be my first choice, in case you were wondering. There were many, many cheeseburgers I wanted to enjoy before I died. Then I waited. It didn't take long. Skippy warned me, "Joe, they're firing a maser at you." I closed my eyes and mentally prepared for searing pain and death. It didn't happen. All I felt was the comet shaking slightly and moving around, jiggling kind of, gently vibrating. "In case you're wondering why you are still alive," Skippy said, "they're using a low-power maser. They are not trying to blast the comet apart. That would create a big hazard for them, as then they would have to keep track of many small objects instead of one medium-sized one. The low-power maser is heating up one side of the comet boiling off ice, and that's making the comet change course. In case you were wondering why I didn't mention this possibility before, I wasn't sure this is what they would do for certain. Didn't want you to get your hopes up. Sometimes the Kristang like to use comets for target practice, and that would not have been good for you. Nothing to worry about for now." For now? Damn, it was driving me crazy that I couldn't talk back to him. Trying to relax, I took in some deep breaths as the comet vibrated gently around me. Not too relaxed. I had to remind myself not to let go of the dead man switch by accident. The worst part, if that happened, would not be me dying by accident. It would be Skippy concluding that in the end, I truly was a dumbass monkey. Then the comet lurched to one side. "Not to worry, Joe," Skippy called. "A chunk of ice broke off, that's all. They've switched aim to boil that chunk of ice to nothing, and they're done. They're switching back to the comet." Now, this could become a problem. The comet is rotating so that the maser will hit the hole in about 12 minutes. Voids in comets are not that unusual. However, the hole we made is rather large for the size of the comet, and when the tarp is exposed, that will certainly look suspicious. Let me think on this. And while I'm thinking about it, he added, "don't do anything stupid like trying to use the dropship's engines or thrusters." He added that as my hand was poised on the controls to power up the engines. I put my hand back in my lap. "Think faster, Skippy," I said to myself. Now that I wasn't expecting to die immediately in a sizzling maser cannon beam, it would suck to die like this. "Got it," Skippy said excitedly. "Sort of, I think. The good news is this is going to be cool either way, because I've never done this before. The bad news is, it could be a spectacular failure. Thus, guaranteed cool either way, huh? Coolest, of course, if you survive. That goes without saying, right? Man, I wish you could see this. It is majorly cool. To me. Maybe not to a monkey. Still, totally cool." What was driving me crazy was not that I didn't know what idiot thing he was trying. It was not being able to interrupt him rambling on and on. The comet's vibration changed. I don't know what was going on or how to describe it. It simply felt different. Maybe like there were two sources of vibration. It's working, Joe. I think... maybe... Yep,
it's working. Sort of. Close enough, right?
Heh-heh. At the sound of heh-heh, the hairs on the back of my neck stood up. What the hell was he doing?
In case you're wondering what I'm doing, it's only 100% gold-plated grade-A awesomeness, Joe. Although when you think about it, part of that expression doesn't make any sense. You're trying to convince your audience that something is genuinely, indisputably awesome, right? Then why would you brag about something being gold-plated? Why not solid gold?
Maybe I got the expression wrong.
Because you could gold-plate a dog turd, and that's not awesome, that's just gold-plating on a dog turd, right?
Anyway, what was I saying? I forget. Couldn't have been too important. Oh, wait! I know. I was going to tell you the awesome thing I'm doing.
Solid gold awesome. Let's get that straight. This is awesome goldness all the way to the center, buddy boy.
I could have prayed for death right then, if that would get him to shut the hell up.
Where was I? He continued.
Oh, yeah. Explaining what I'm doing.
Ha! Explaining high-order multidimensional physics to a monkey. What am I thinking?
I'll break it down for you Barney style. Joke intended. Thought that was pretty clever of me.
Man, I never get tired of that one. Only you, Joe, would combat an alien invasion in an ice cream truck. Not even a nice ice cream truck. A crappy ice cream truck.
So, here goes. This will blow your tiny monkey mind.
I'm warping space-time in a tiny, tiny area to make the comet spin just a bit differently than it was. Differently enough that the maser beam will miss the hole we made.
Cool, huh?
Hell, you know what? I've never warped space-time in such a tiny local area. The math is completely different. It's interesting. In fact, I don't think it's ever been done before.
I'm the first! Cool, huh?
He rambled on and on like that a while. I'm not sure how long. I stopped listening. Maybe he talked the whole 12 minutes. He must have. He was talking when the 12 minutes passed. About what, I don't remember. It didn't matter. It was good simply to hear his voice. To hear someone talking to me while my hands shook and I sat in the dropship alone with my fear. Being alone is bad. Being afraid is terrible. To be afraid and alone is the worst empty feeling.
You still listening, Joe?
I think you're good. I think you'll be safe. That maser should cut off in a couple minutes. The Kristang are about satisfied they've pushed it safely out of the way.
The dead man's switch was still tightly clutched in my hand. Waiting out the time until the Kristang hopefully turned off their maser beam, I held the switch in both hands as insurance against one hand growing tired. Finally, Skippy gave me the all-clear signal.
You're good, Joe. Maser is off. The Kristang commander is happy the comet will miss their formation. They are proceeding with the cross-decking operation.
Wow. They boiled off more of the comet than I expected. More than was strictly necessary. It's a good thing we didn't pick a smaller comet, or part of the dropship may be exposed by now.
You can turn off the stealth field to save power, Joe.
Hey, good thing they didn't need target practice to tune their masers, huh?
That would not have been good.
Anywho, I'm going to stop talking in about 18 minutes. I'm approaching the relay station and I will need to concentrate, or all this will be for nothing. In a couple hours, we will have drifted far enough apart that I won't be able to talk to you. Until I have to go, here is a medley of show tunes to keep you company.
Oklahoma, where the wind comes sweeping down the plain.
Show tunes. Freaking show tunes. Like my grandparents' show tunes. He sang one tune after another for the whole 18 minutes, then abruptly cut off without a goodbye. I didn't hear from him after that. Either we drifted too far away or he downloaded a whole lot of data from the relay and was busy sorting through it. Carefully deactivating the dead man switch, I put it away, and I also safed the missile warhead. 14 hours later, the dropship's sensors picked up a gamma ray burst, then 7 others. The Kristang task force must have jumped away. Good riddance to them. 26 hours after I lost contact with Skippy, the dropship console alerted me to a single nearby gamma ray burst, and the Dutchman pinged me, one brief signal. I sent back a short ping to let them know about Skippy and pick him up first message. They must have been curious about why the comet wasn't where it was supposed to be and why Skippy wasn't with me. 16 minutes later, another gamma ray burst, then nothing. Silence. Then I was alone for another 19 hours. 19 hours, not knowing what was going on, not knowing whether something bad had happened to the Flying Dutchman. It could not possibly have taken 19 hours for them to contact, locate, and pick up Skippy. So had something happened to him? Had the Kristang ships somehow detected Skippy and intercepted him? Had he been detected as he ransacked the data banks of the relay station? No. If the Dutchman had pinged Skippy and he hadn't responded, they would have contacted me again right away. For some reason, they had contacted Skippy, then whatever happened, they hadn't been able to pick me up. Crap. There weren't many good options for me. The dropship could recycle oxygen for one person for almost a month, and drinking water wasn't a problem as long as I stretched out the supply to match the oxygen. Food was a problem. I'd only brought along enough sludges for a week. What the hell was I going to do? The navigation system told me the comet's new course was taking it further away from the local star, and the comet's next closest approach to the relay station would not be for over 1,000 years. Projecting out 10,000 years, the limit of the dropship computer's ability, the comet would not get close enough to the star to boil off the remainder of the ice. The dropship would remain hidden for at least another 10,000 years. Long enough. Poking around the dropship, I did not find a stash of food that I didn't know about, other than a plastic bag with one lonely peanut tucked into a pouch on the side of the co-pilot's seat. Someone flying or training in the dropship must have left it there. One peanut. I stared at that peanut for a long time before wedging the bag into a gap in the pilot console. The only sludges I'd brought along were plain banana flavor. No one liked them, as they tasted bland and artificial. The only reason I'd brought them along was to get rid of them. Now they were my only food supply. That was bad planning. And what the hell, right? I'd ration sludges to give the Dutchman maximum time to come pick me up. Then when the sludges ran out, I would eat that peanut. The controls could be programmed to slowly decrease the oxygen supply. I'd been assured that I would gradually fall asleep and it would be almost painless. Huh. My high school classmates had not voted me most likely to end up encased in a comet orbiting the outer reaches of an alien star system. Somehow they had missed that one. They hadn't voted me class clown or anything cool like that either. Crap. Now that I thought about it, I'm sure that by now some joker had cut out a picture of Barney and pasted it over my photo in our senior yearbook. Like that mattered now. Having nothing else to do, I set a timer for 10 hours until my next sludge. Turned the lights down, and tried to get some sleep. And wouldn't you know it, just as I was drifting off to sleep, the console alerted me to another gamma ray burst, and the Dutchman pinged me with a brief signal. Taking you aboard shortly, ETA 4 minutes. I felt some jostling, then a hard bump, then a shudder. Then I heard Skippy's voice again.
Hey, Joe! Good to have you back, Skippy shouted. After the ship recovered me, it had to jump away. It would have taken too long to fly through normal space to pick you up. The ship would have been exposed for too long. We waited until you got far away from the relay before we risked coming back. Hold tight. They're cutting a hole for you. Should only be a minute before you can come out.
Thanks, Skippy. It's great to hear your voice again. Were you successful? With the relay, I mean?
We're in luck, Joe.
Although now that I think about it, that expression is ambiguous, isn't it? Luck can be good or bad.
No matter. In this case, our luck is good. Success, yes, sort of. Come aboard and I'll give you a full briefing. You, better shower first, huh?